in terms of calf health. Like, you think about the gastrointestinal tract, there's normal commensal bacteria that you want to be there that helps maintain the intestinal integrity of that barrier between the lumen or the intestine of the calf and the actual inside of the calf. And so when you have those positive bacteria there, they actually to help maintain that and provide protection to that calf and help to kind of promote a healthy gastrointestinal tract and keep some of those negative pathogens at bay.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Hi-D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status to deliver higher milk yield and carcass efficiency. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Asepsis, an ounce of prevention. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Volac, unlocking ruminant potential through nutritional solutions for a sustainable future.
Hello, Mark Thomas here from Dairy Health, and welcome to the Dairy Podcast Show today. It's a pleasure to have Dr. Sarah Morrison with us today from the Meiner Institute. She's a research scientist. Hello, Sarah.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Thanks so much. I guess, as usual, I'll have you introduce yourself, but also I think it'd be great for the listeners to know a little bit more about Meiner Institute, originally from Northern New York and having collaboration and plenty of different programs at Meiner. It's a really interesting place. So if you can give us a little background about where you're from, not too far from Meiner over the lake in Vermont, and a bit of your background, and then tell us a little bit about Meiner and then what you do there. And we'll get into talking about calves and replacements.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation. I grew up originally in Vermont, like you said. My family, both my parents grew up on farms. So I grew up on a 110 cow Jersey farm in Leicester, Vermont. So that's kind of where I got my start in the dairy industry and my love of cows. As I went to undergrad, I ended up at the University of Vermont in animal science. I went through their CREAM program. And as my last semester, I ended up doing the advanced dairy management program at Meiner Institute, which is a really great kind of inoculation in terms of dairy cow nutrition management. And that's what really sparked my interest in research. And I was actually able to stay as a research intern the year after I graduated from undergrad and worked on different projects at Meiner, and ended up going to University of Illinois for my master's and PhD program, working with Jim Drakely in calf and heifer nutrition and management. And then about just shy of 6 years ago, I had the opportunity to come back to Meiner as a research scientist. So I've been here since 2018, working on different nutrition projects, not only in calf and heifer, but also in lactating cows and different welfare and other projects that we have going in. We kind of dabble across a lot of different avenues at Meiner.
Great.
Beta-carotene impacts reproductive performance in cattle. Because the main sources of beta-carotene are forages, most cattle don't get enough. Victus Transition from DSM Firmenich contains a blend of beta-carotene and mixed tocopherols, which provide needed vitamin A and antioxidants. Victus Transition fed cattle have better fertility rates and improved colostrum quality. Make sure your cattle get the beta-carotene they need with Victus Transition. Visit dsm.com/Victus Transition.
I think for the audience also, research scientists, that's pretty cool, but sounds like, wow, maybe way, way out there. But I think what's really interesting about Meiner is the research is really practical, right? You do some basic stuff, but at the end of the day, you're looking for projects, strategies that can be implemented on the dairy, probably a bit more directed right towards Northeast type management, but certainly plenty of stuff that can be applicable across the industry. So tell us a little bit about you know, that research program at Minor and, you know, some of the things you're doing.
Yeah, certainly. And that was really like kind of what drove me was the practical application. What can I do to benefit farmers, as I kind of come from that background and wanting to make sure that like my dad or people who are still on the farm can really take the information that we're learning. I think that's what the great place that Minor is that we're really that step away from the farm, but we can really provide that practical application. So as a research scientist, my job varies day to day. A lot of what my responsibilities are leading those different projects that we're conducting that are asking those applied questions that we can then implement on farm. I go out and give talks on what we're doing and write for our farm report and different applied like resources like that to translate some of the information that we are learning from the projects that we're doing.
I think a really important point, you know, and some of the discussion for today too, are what are some of the things we can do calf-wise that again, you could take home and potentially implement tomorrow on the dairy. So tell us a little bit about the some of the calf work that you and your team at Minor are doing and the applicability to you know, some of the commercial systems we're working with.
Yeah, I always had an interest in calf health and nutrition. I think they're kind of fascinating in terms of like the challenges and the transformations that they make in that short period of time. So we're always looking for different things to help improve health and growth of these calves and making sure they're productive members of the herd as they go on. So some of the work that we've been doing has been related to positive biofilms, which you might think biofilm bad, which historically has probably been the context. But as I've learned over the last couple of years too, biofilms and positive bacteria can be really beneficial in calf systems. And there's some exciting applications that we've been evaluating the last couple of years.
So that sounds really cool because, again, when I first read, you know, the email that comes with your introduction and saw the word biofilms, the first thing you think about is, okay, bad biofilms, right? We got to clean that better. We got to remove that biofilm. It certainly makes a lot of sense. You know, the obviously antimicrobial stewardship, plenty of the research that we have done looking at reducing antimicrobial risk. You know, it's really interesting to see. We have some trials where calves treated for diarrhea with antibiotics were worse off than calves that were not treated at all, just electrolytes, oral hydration therapy. So tell us a little bit about good biofilms. You know, how do you make a good biofilm, and how do you not clean it so well that good biofilm leaves?
Yeah, so a large number of the like bacteria out kind of in the wild actually create biofilms, and it's kind of their protective ability to adhere to surfaces or provide them protection. So they're actually able to do that to almost proliferate and survive in different environments. And in terms of calf health, like you think about the gastrointestinal tract, there's normal commensal bacteria that you want to be there that helps maintain the intestinal integrity of that barrier between the lumen or the intestine of the calf and the actual inside of the calf. And so when you have those positive bacteria there, they actually to help maintain that and provide protection to that calf and help to kind of promote a healthy gastrointestinal tract and keep some of those negative pathogens at bay. So those are kind of the positive biofilms or bacteria that we're really interested in trying to promote in terms of the calf. And then on the other side of things, we've also done some stuff in terms of positive biofilms in the environment, or maybe preserving the cleanliness of a calf hutch after you've cleaned it and gotten rid of those negative bacteria or other microbiota that are there.
So what are some bacteria, and maybe naming some genus species that I've never even heard of, but what are some examples of bacteria that create a positive biofilm?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've looked at is kefir, or You might see it in the store, supermarket even. It's kind of like a drinkable yogurt that you can actually ferment yourself and kind of perpetuate from the grains. So it's kind of like a sourdough starter where you have kind of the living culture of the kefir, and you can add it to milk and it allow it to ferment. And it has a lot of lactic acid bacteria, some yeast and fungi that are all really good for, when you drink it, the gastrointestinal tract. So that's one of the positive biofilms that we've been kind of looking at and really evaluating that as a very on-farm applied probiotic that you can make yourself and give to calves.
Yeah, I think kefir, I would say, is available in most stores and so forth in kind of the specialty milk or beverage areas. As most of you know, I live in Torreon, Mexico, and there's plenty of kefir products on the shelf and HEB and so forth. So, not an uncommon product. I'm not sure how many people consume it. It's a unique taste, right? It's not something that maybe everyone, it's a sour milk, sour, just like you said.
Personally, I like more of the mango strawberry, but the calves didn't seem to complain too much when we've done it with them. So
put something sweet or fruit in it tastes better. So, okay, two things. One, can you talk a little bit of maybe more about that internal intestinal biofilm versus, okay, I can relate or get to the fact, okay, we now have some biofilm on the kefutch that prevents other things from growing, but internally, we're really looking at not just having these bacteria in the gut, but actually adhering to the villi and creating a biofilm? Is that correct?
It's more of how the kefir is made in terms of like the grains that kind of perpetuate that culture. So you can like take the grains out of the kefir, so you'd strain it off and then you'd have the cultured milk product that you would then consume. But then the grains help those bacteria that are there and kind of helping to make that fermentation process happen continue. So then as you continue to feed it, then they continue to grow. But you can still get the benefits of what's in that cultured milk product when you consume it. So when those bacteria, yeast and fungi reach the intestine, they don't necessarily attach, but they're associated with that intestinal lining. And that's what kind of competitively inhibits those negative bacteria that might be present in the intestine and help to mitigate some of the negative responses that we might see if they were to kind of get out of hand.
Okay. And really this whole process is based on competitive inhibition, correct? Is that really?
Yeah, I think that would be the main like kind of theory of what's happening within the gastrointestinal tract.
Okay. Gee, I have a calf ranch and I want to try this. How do I even start to make, you say, you could do this on farm, this is do it at home. How do I make kefir?
Yeah, so technically you could even go on Amazon and order some kefir grains if you were to look for something. And then, so you'd end up with a little amount of the kefir grains, and then you'd want to kind of scale it up. So you could add it to maybe a liter of milk and let it ferment. You'd pour off the fluid and then retain the grains, and then you keep feeding it milk. So you'd let it sit out for a room temp for 18 to 24 hours, and at the end of that you'd have something that you could actually feed to calves or even drink to yourself if you wanted to. And then so it kind of just keeps perpetuating itself, and as those kefir grains grow, you can start to ferment even more milk. So if you had a large ranch, you might need to a few days or a few more starters to get enough to be able to ferment the amount that you would need to feed. But it's basically that simple in terms of how you'd be able to apply this to the calves.
Okay.
And so some of the projects that we've done, we fed like a quarter to a half a cup of kefir to calves once a day.
Okay. And kefir grains are what type of grains?
It's basically the biofilm that they're protecting themselves from the environment and kind of just growing on themselves and encapsulating them. So that's kind of the live part of the kefir fermentation process that you can then strain off and keep perpetuating that fermentation.
And when you say grains, are you using that in a generic term, or you're actually talking like barley or,
No, it's like basically the clumps of cells that remain after the fermentation is done.
Similar to maybe I have some friends that make kombucha.
Yeah, like the SCOBY, or I think that's what it's called. Yeah, so those grow. It's the same kind of concept, or like a sourdough starter that it keeps.
Okay. Kind of. I never did make it. A friend gave me a part of their SCOBY, and it's kind of a, you know, if you think about it, it's you're, that you're going to consume that when you first think about it. It's kind of scary in a little bit. It looks like something you'd pull out of your pond or something and you're going to now make a drink out of it. Okay. And given that, how do I know, you know, I'm doing this on dairy and I have a vat of milk sitting out for 24 plus hours in July in name, whatever state, New York. How do I know that when I go to feed that two calves, it's okay to feed the calves and it's not going to, because, you know, on the flip side,
you don't want to cause anything.
People, you know, the move towards cleaning buckets and disinfecting and maybe we can go down that path a little bit, right? I think, you know, there's some work in humans that look at, you know, kids that grow up in the city and sterilized environments, you know, don't have that natural exposure. So I guess one, how do we know that that product is good bacteria growing, so to speak? And, you know, a little bit of that discussion of just, yeah, normal natural flora and then over sanitizing, if you will, or over killing bacteria.
Yeah. So the kefir itself, when it's done being fermented, and the temperature may influence how long it actually needs to sit out to be able to do this, because you think about bacteria and how they double and some of that. So they're definitely going to be more active if it's a little bit warmer. But that kind of becomes more like a drinkable yogurt, like the viscosity becomes a little bit thicker. And that's really what you're looking for, because the active ingredient, they're making an exopolysaccharide called kefirin. And that's kind of what's thought to be the positive part of the kefir. So after the milk, like you take milk from the bulk tank, so you know what that looks like and the viscosity of that, it becomes a little bit thicker after it's done fermenting. So that's where you'd be able to do that. And then the pH also drops a little bit from where whole milk would be. So that would be another test to see if it's been fermented properly.
Okay. And that can be started with pasteurized milk also. Just trying to think of, you know, diseases that we're trying to eliminate, you know, we're generally recommending starting with pasteurized milk or.
Yeah, we've done even just like saleable milk from the store. We've started with some of that or pulled from the bulk tank or whatever source makes sense for that farm. Obviously, we don't want to inoculate it with something that is contaminated with E. coli or something else that might be bad for that animal.
Would some of this concept be related to MOS, to monooligosaccharides also in terms of competitive inhibition? You said these kefirins are...
Yeah, I think other probiotics that are available, like lactic acid, bacteria, it would be a similar concept, I think, in terms of what's happening within the gastrointestinal tract.
Okay. So you've done some trials on this. Casey Bolas with our team, previously with Extension, worked on some of these projects with you. Also, what were the results? What did you find? So we add some quantity, a quarter cup of kefir to calves, you know, what stages and some of the results that you found?
Yeah, so originally this was funded through Northern New York Ag Development, the northern six counties in New York. They have some funding available for practical on-farm studies. So we did this on three area farms, and one of them was minor, so we had a little bit more detailed, like starter intake, milk replacer, more frequent growth, but we wanted to see the application on commercial farms as well and kind of prove that it's a pretty easy to manage process. And when we started out, we were thinking that this was going to benefit calves during that early pre-weaning period, like first 21 days, because we see the most gastrointestinal diarrhea issues during that time. So for that study, we fed it for the first 21 days of life, a quarter cup once a day. We didn't see any effects on health like we thought we might with the number of calves that we had. But the interesting result that we actually saw was as they got weaned and went through the weaning process, the calves that were supplemented with kefir in the first 3 weeks of life actually consumed more starter than the calves that did not consume the kefir. And it was kind of shocking because you think of the carryover effect from 3 weeks previously. I wasn't really expecting to see that result, but it was pretty consistent. And I think the difference was anywhere between like 6 pounds or like just over 2 to 3 kilos of starter between the two over the pre-weaning period.
Okay. And do you have average daily gain during those periods also? They're consuming more, so they grew more, assumingly?
I don't think the results for the average daily gain were not as obvious in terms of that. And we only tracked them until 8 weeks of age. So with the increased starter intake as they got through weaning, we didn't follow them initially through the post-weaning period. So it was kind of like, oh, we should have done that at the time. But that was something that we went back and followed up on that. So for that study and the time period which we evaluated the weight of the calves, we didn't actually see much of a difference in average daily gain like you might expect with the increased starter intake.
But are you expecting, or I mean, you know, generally we expect higher intake, more gain, although we have seen in some cases, for whatever reason, lower efficiency, but any follow-up trials or information to say that, yes, that's a benefit?
Yeah. So we kind of, with the information we got from that study, we kind of went back to the drawing board and were kind of brainstorming what might be causing that increase in starter, kind of that carryover effect, and what maybe is impacting their ability to consume more starter. And then also wanted to follow up with, are they growing more in the post-weaning period? So we went back and did this study again, but we added another treatment and actually sought to challenge the kefir a little bit by adding a yeast to it. Because we were thinking that with the addition of the yeast in the fermentation, it might improve the amount of like the bioactive components within the kefir as a way to kind of increase the amount of kefirin within that kefir product.
You have that, or is that pending?
Yeah. So we did that, and the things that we added, we followed them for a longer period of time after weaning. And then we also took some rumen fluid sampling and some intestinal permeability throughout the pre-weaning period, because we were thinking that there might be some changes at the gastrointestinal tract level. We didn't see any improvement in terms of the integrity of the gastrointestinal tract, but we again saw an increase in starter intake as they got closer to weaning. And to be honest, we're still analyzing some of the average daily gain and growth from these calves in the post-weaning period. So I don't have some of that information, but we did see, again, the starter intake. So I'll be interested when we do finally get that growth data in the post-weaning period.
Our Yeast 40 is a natural biotechnology from ICC, designed to boost the health and productivity of animals under challenging production systems. Our Yeast 40 performance is supported by an unique processing technology that results in a pure product containing high levels of beta-glucans, MOS, and yeast metabolites. These factors, combined, promote the ruminal and intestinal modulation, helping the animals to reach their full potential.
So, I think that's really cool information, you know, something that sounds pretty easy to do. Obviously, some management, everything on the dairy has management, but, if you do it right, probably very low expense on the end. You're not buying some commercial product, what have you. But along those lines, you know, there's certainly plenty of commercial products that exist for calves, for cows, obviously. Probiotics, prebiotics, live yeast cultures, etc. You know, when a producer asks you, hey, here's a product. Obviously, we're looking for research, but any comments there? You know, in your research, you're obviously studying a lot of these effects and how they affect the calf. The milk-fed calf is, you know, this monogastric mix, if you will, or evolving. It's not a lactating cow, full ruminant. What are some of your comments within that, and how do you answer those questions?
Yeah, I think it's probably the generic question, it depends, but that's what makes dairying so interesting, in that everybody can do things a little bit differently and get similar results. So I think it's what you're willing to manage and what works for you and your calves. So like, if this works and you're willing to manage the fermentation of the kefir, that's great, but maybe at a larger scale or something else, that there's other products out there that certainly have been shown to be beneficial in this same area. So I think it's just interesting to learn what's causing the effects and what the outcomes are on calves. And certainly there's many ways to get to the same result.
And I guess we get back right to the research, right? How do we really look at the data and make sure that what we're implementing or considering has good data, and then the economics of that. I'm here at the Society for Theriogenology conference and have a talk later this afternoon with a group of veterinarians. And that's kind of the basis of the discussion, is how do we make decisions on the dairy? And as we've talked about lots on these podcasts, not just the neighbor uses it or there's some fancy flyer, but the work that you're doing as a research scientist, you know, we have appropriate sample size, we have good trial design, we have control groups, etc., and you can actually answer these questions. And I think even more important and great to see followed up is, you know, many people might stop at greater starter intake based on first principles. Gee, that's a no-brainer. They're eating more. That has to be good. Well, gee, if they eat more and make the same or have the same gain, or on the cow side, they eat more and have the same milk, that's not good at all, right? So great that you're taking the next step to actually answer that. We would hope they gain more. It would be interesting if they didn't, right? But what we really need to know is, I guess, my point.
Yeah, I think that's where following up with a study or adding another layer to see what's different between different treatments, and then yeah, the repeatability of different projects like that, where was it just a fluke of one time in the group of calves that you had at the time, or can we show consistent results?
Great. Sarah, then if someone would truly want to do this, would you say now, I mean, you guys have enough data. Do you have some dairies doing this now based on the early work that you have? Or, you know, this has been implemented in some dairies, or is this something stay tuned yet? It sounds like it's a rather low risk, you know, to do this, but any comments there?
Of the two farms that we worked with, I think one likes the outcomes that they saw, kind of by word of mouth, or their kind of feedback was that they thought it did well, but I don't think they chose to keep managing that or doing the kefir. I've heard of other farms that have done this, and that was what kind of sparked this initial question to begin with, was, is this a practical on-farm thing that we can manage? So I think it just depends on what the farms want to manage or try, and I think it's a pretty low risk to try it out and see what you think, how much time it takes to do this yourself, and what the outcomes are on your farm. But it just depends kind of on what they're willing to try and do.
Really interesting to think about, you know, what we can do on farm to make some change and you know, think outside of the box, right? You know, you have these human products, kefir, et cetera. And, you know, you look at both directions. I see now in nutrition stores or Amazon or advertised, you know, colostrum supplements, bovine colostrum supplements for humans, right?
Yeah.
They're really expensive. I'm thinking just take a bag of, you know, 25 pound of colostrum replacer or supplement and put it in your coffee, what have you. But yeah, really interesting, you know, functional proteins and all the things that have just evolved in nature over time that we now are maybe just really starting to investigate further the benefits of these things.
Yeah, certainly.
So Sarah, as we wrap up the conversation here, Any final points at all before we get to the three dairy podcast questions?
Yeah, appreciate being on today. And I think it's always interesting to see what the trends are within the dairy industry and the different applications as we learn more about what biofilms might be. Are they good? Are they bad? And I think we can use some of these tools and our knowledge of what they do to our benefit. So I would say not all biofilms are bad, and I think we can use them to our advantage.
Excellent. Thanks. And I think it's really interesting.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Our Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Diamond V, because animal health deserves a healthier approach. Trow Nutrition, North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Expand your feed possibilities with a trusted partner. You can count on Schooler for consistent, high-quality feed ingredients with reliable delivery. Access an extensive portfolio of product options that fit your unique rations and cost parameters, and get the essential nutrition solutions for your herd at all stages of life. Visit schooler.com/feed to learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. That's Schooler, schooler.com/feed.
We move into our questions, but I think before that, and kind of related, I'd say for the listeners, check out Minor Institute website. One of the questions we ask is, what is a reference or go-to for dairy? And I'll let Sarah answer that. I guess for me, various things, you know, from Journal of Dairy Science to lots of web pages, etc. Hopefully some of you name the dairy podcast show, but the Minor Institute newsletter. I know, I think you just get on a list. Maybe you can fill us in on the details of that, Sarah, but I know I'm on the list, and I just read the most recent one where you have some really good articles on colostrum and calf feeding. So there's always something relevant in that Minor newsletter, regardless of where you live geographically. So correct, is you just sign up for that on the website?
Yeah, so our website, whminer.org, is where you could find our farm report, our monthly newsletter, and I think you can either email Rachel or reach out if you can't find where to access it, but you'll get that sent in your email every month. So we are glad to hear that people like you are reading it and find it useful. So that's certainly a dairy resource. For me, JDS is always one of my go-to things, but I also appreciate people like Al Kurtz or Mike Hutchins, who have put out publications on their knowledge and some of that that they've carried through their career and learned over the time. So I'm always looking at stuff that they've kind of aggregated and put together as well.
Great. And on the kind of non-professional side, whether just leisure or professional development, anything recently that you've come across that would be valuable to share with the listeners? I'll just say the last podcast that just came out with Matt Sattler and colleagues from Diamond V and GPS, Getting Naked. I started listening to that, and really good. You know, the concept of being transparent with your clients, your customers, and really through that path of improving the relationship with them. So I'll put a plug in. You know, I really enjoy these podcasts, but as a host, I get to hear all these recommendations, and that one I took. So for the listeners, Getting Naked is a good read that's really relevant for I think what most of us or all of us do listening to this. But Sarah, what about you?
One podcast that I listened to recently that was really kind of good at the time and helped me kind of reset in terms of what I was thinking about was the Mindset Mentor, and they just have really kind of short podcasts that talk about different topics related to how you approach different situations, or kind of give you tools on actually framing what you're thinking about and making those changes. So that was kind of a really good one that I came across recently that I would recommend.
Great. I just jotted that down, so I'll have to check that out, the Mindset Mentor. You're probably biased in a good way, because you got to say dairy farming like my dad, although sometimes dairy farming like grandpa is not what we want to do, right? But what sets aside, and you have an intimate knowledge of this because you grew up on a dairy, you saw lots of transition, I'm sure, over the years, and now you work with dairy producers all the time. What sets aside those progressive producers that have maintained longevity in the industry?
I'm always impressed with the people who are very just open to new ideas and learning and always thinking ahead. Like, they're kind of 5 years down the road or even further, and they've already thought through all the scenarios of what could be coming and have a plan. So I always appreciate kind of the resourcefulness of those people and how they're able to kind of flex to different situations.
Cool. Yeah, I know. I think that's pretty much every day I use examples of things that I did 25 years ago, you know, while doing farm calls in Northern New York, and what we now know, some of those things that we don't do or we know are actually detrimental. You know, they're not just neutral. It's not that they didn't help. They were actually bad. And you look back and you say, yep, I did plenty of that, but that was the best we knew with the data we had and the times and so forth. So I would thoroughly agree with that. Be open to change. Sarah, it's been a real pleasure to visit with you here this morning and connect. Again, for our listeners, please check out the William H. Minor website. Some really good information there. If you're in New York, you're probably well aware of Minor Institute and the programs and conferences, meetings they have, and so forth. And stay tuned for the future research on kefir and other good bugs that we could use to improve animal performance.
Thank you.
With that, thanks to all our sponsors, and again, thanks to Dr. Sarah Morrison from Minor Institute. Have an amazing day. Thanks for listening.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil with APA Time Zone Hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.